This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by True Niagen Pro. Cellular health is the foundation of wellness. True Niagen Pro helps cells stay resilient. True Niagen Pro is a unique form of vitamin B3 clinically proven to safely increase NAD, a vital resource used to help fuel and maintain the health of all living cells. But this critical cellular resource is not constant. It's been found to decline up to 50% as we age. When NAD levels are low, our cells have a harder time producing the energy they need to maintain our health as we age. Published research shows that increasing NAD boosts cellular energy production, supports healthy cellular metabolism, and promotes cellular repair. When surveyed, True Niagen users report improvements in energy levels and an enhanced sense of overall well-being. True Niagen Pro is backed by multiple published clinical studies and is only available through healthcare practitioners. You can get yours by going to drhoffmanstore.com. That's drhoffmanstore.com for True Niagen Pro. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and now for something completely different, because I don't think we've ever covered this topic in my entire career of broadcasting. But it's an important topic, because it's a topic that afflicts a very, very high percentage of Americans and people across the world. And we're talking about shoulder problems. In particular, an entity that is sometimes referred to as frozen shoulder. I have here with me a movement specialist and an expert in treating chronic musculoskeletal conditions, my good colleague, Dr. Arkady Lipnitsky. And we're going to talk a little bit about the entity that's referred to as frozen shoulder. So welcome. It's a pleasure having
Thank you
on Intelligent Medicine, Arkady.
Always a lot of fun talking to you on the radio.
Right. And I learn a lot because I got to, you know, my internal medicine knowledge is extremely deep, but in terms of the musculoskeletal system, I just barely passed anatomy, and that's how I got through medical school.
And I love sharing.
And I didn't look back after that. So the shoulder is a very, very complex entity. It's a very complex mechanism. It's a beautiful mechanism when it works, but a lot can go wrong. So the first question I'd want to pose to you is, like, why is the shoulder so problematic as a joint? What makes it so vulnerable to problems?
Well, great question. And the answer is simple. It's the only suspended joint with a very complex movement in every line of movement. Therefore, and we expect and we load that shoulder repetitively, daily, with pretty much every activity. We don't have to be athletes or, you know, professional musicians to load the shoulder repetitively. I think every daily activity will do that. And like you said, there's a lot of things that can go wrong with one of the strings. And when I say strings, if you imagine anything that's suspended, and that suspended mechanism depends on muscles that is suspended on, or I like to compare it to strings. Just like a little toy being suspended on the strings, if you pull the strings, one string in the wrong direction, all the other strings have to reflect on that. If you cut off one of the strings, all the other strings will reflect on that as well. So the movement of the capsule itself, of the joint itself, depends on a multitude of strings pulling in different directions or muscles and reflecting upon each other or compensating to each other. And that's what becomes complex in the traumas or pathologies of the shoulder. And often certain things become misdiagnosed because in anticipation to see one thing, we often skip or forget to look at others. And just because the muscle is not torn or showing any pathology, signs of pathology on imaging like MRI, it does not mean that the muscle functions in the perfect way, and often that muscle will be a compensatory muscle, which will compensate to inactivity or a pathology or trauma of a different string or different muscle, and on itself, by compensation, can create a chronic pathological process or repetitive injury syndrome, inflammation, pain, and so on and so forth.
So there's this thing that people refer to, frozen shoulder. So on your website, and I'll mention it, it's a nice questionnaire. It's a questionnaire that you can take yourself to do a little self-assessment. It's rebalancenyc.com/frozen shoulder. And if you go there on the rebalancenyc.com website, there's a questionnaire. And it helps you assess whether you have this condition of frozen shoulder. So what's interesting about it is it starts off by saying, what is your biological sex? And in this day and age of, cis, trans, is it discriminating, men versus women? What's the deal here?
Sex? Certain pathologists do discriminate against certain sexes, as we know.
Right.
So, as we're going to be discussing, further, this particular condition, frozen shoulder, or often called also adhesive capsulitis, is more medical term for that, will be targeting significantly, again, my experience, significantly more female patients than male patients. And again, there's a reason behind this, and we'll discuss it as well. So that's why in a questionnaire, whether for yourself to take a test and find out if your shoulder pain is actually developing or already established frozen shoulder, it's a very simple few questions questionnaire that will help you to identify, you'll get an answer right away, whether you are prone to this condition, whether your symptoms demonstrating signs of this condition, and whether you should take action immediately and maybe not procrastinate regarding this condition.
And why is it important to, people generally don't want to go to the doctor. It's very convenient. Mostly people say, this eventually will get better. Tincture of time. I'll just let it get better. Is there a danger in letting a frozen shoulder stay frozen?
Well, as a matter of fact, what's interesting about frozen shoulder, there's two different types, but if it's a primary or idiopathic frozen shoulder, it actually self-resolving condition. Actually, okay. Will go away by itself. It will take about 3 years to do so.
Oh no!
So I'm not sure how many.
That's not on my timetable.
Right. Yeah. Not on mine either. And majority of people really cannot and will not tolerate the inability to move the shoulder beyond a very short range, and not being able to sleep on it, not being able to do most of the daily activity. And often, we should ask a question, quality of life. Do we have a quality of life if we cannot do the most basic things?
Mm-hmm.
So the truth is, yes, the faster you react,
fastening your bra from behind or...
Any what we call internal, external rotation of the shoulder will be very sensitive or actually unable to perform. So yes, reaching, lifting your arm beyond 90 degrees forward or sideways, that would be one of them. Inability to do so. Or bringing your arm to the back of your back, basically, like you said, trying to tie up the bra.
Touch your sacrum, even, like right at the top of your butt.
Correct. Kind
of, if you can't do that, that's already a sign.
It's one of the signs, yeah. Right? Or tying up your ponytail, or brushing your hair.
Oh,
that
okay.
would be another sign.
I'm not a hipster. I don't have a ponytail, but it's okay. I mean,
it's still healthy to brush your hair. Well, in any case, it's a simple questionnaire that will demonstrate, in a very simple form and movement, whether you are considered to be at risk or you should be, maybe stepping ahead a little bit and do some analysis of this condition. Because it's one of the conditions that often misdiagnosed and misinterpreted. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a very misunderstood condition as well. And there are plenty of other shoulder-related, you know, shoulder pain conditions that will be
so there's a
very similar. Diagnosis.
There's a different, it could be a tear of something. Or
absolutely. Okay. We can have anything from the capsular tear to a tendons tear to ligamental changes within the shoulder.
Or arthritis actually
arthritis of the cartilage,
right.
Correct, inside
right.
the joint.
Okay.
So there's a whole spectrum of problems, or even a neck pain that can radiate to the shoulder
okay.
and create a very similar symptoms. Yeah, it's not going to limit the range of motion, but we're still going to have very similar pain-related symptoms.
Okay, so first thing people want, you know, they get a pain, you know, somewhere. They want to go for an MRI, and you mentioned MRIs earlier, and you said MRIs, you know, they can be useful, but is that the end-all and be-all of diagnosing
well,
this?
I'm going to give you my opinion on that, and I'm sure a lot of colleagues will disagree, but
people
I think
who do
the
MRIs
test
may disagree.
Might be. I think any test, regardless what test we do, has to change the dynamic of a treatment, or at least an approach.
Mm-hmm.
If your basic physical examination, if you hopefully extensive questionnaire and you know history taking skills cannot narrow down the problem, and you think that there are multiple treatment approaches and you cannot pick one based on established diagnosis, then I think further testing like MRI or some other imaging would be appropriate. Not x-ray, by the way. It's not going to show pretty much anything.
You want to see the soft tissue.
But very mild arthritis.
You want to see the soft tissue.
When the patient calls and asks me if they want to come for consultation, if I need an MRI, my answer is no. I need your shoulder and I need your story.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's significantly more
than
we can get.
And your examining hands and your eyes.
Significantly more we can get out of the properly questioning the patient and getting to the bottom of the, you know, the problem versus looking at the images. And especially with the frozen shoulder.
This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by True Niagen Pro. Cellular health is the foundation of wellness. True Niagen Pro helps cells stay resilient. True Niagen Pro is a unique form of vitamin B3, clinically proven to safely increase NAD, a vital resource used to help fuel and maintain the health of all living cells. But this critical cellular resource is not constant. It's been found to decline up to 50% as we age. When NAD levels are low, our cells have a harder time producing the energy they need to maintain our health as we age. Published research shows that increasing NAD boosts cellular energy production, supports healthy cellular metabolism, and promotes cellular repair. When surveyed, True Niagen users report improvements in energy levels and an enhanced sense of overall well-being. True Niagen Pro is backed by multiple published clinical studies and is only available through healthcare practitioners. You can get yours by going to drhoffmanstore.com. That's drhoffmanstore.com for True Niagen Pro.
So there's an interesting piece to your questionnaire here. It's like right below, you know, what's your biological sex? Have you been diagnosed or do you believe you have any of the following? Diabetes, thyroid conditions, adrenal stress, testosterone imbalance, or hormonal imbalance? Now, that's an interesting question. That's even before you ask people, whether people can brush their hair or tie their ponytail or reach behind them. You ask about these other conditions. Do they have a bearing on whether someone has a likelihood of frozen shoulder?
As a matter of fact, they do. And that's what idiopathic frozen shoulder, again, from my experience, and I've been doing it for 21 years.
We don't know the specific cause.
Correct. Idiopathic is unknown cause, but it's every idiopathic condition or unknown cause condition often has a very strong linkage to certain bases. Mm. In frozen shoulder, we have a very, very strong basis to connect it with different hormonal imbalances. And that's practically why we see it more in women than men. I would say probably 2-to-1, because at certain age, and I would say the age would range for true frozen shoulder between about 35 to 55, at certain age, especially with very early changes of hormones, whether it's related to early menopause or any other problems, and you will probably be able to expand more on that, but I think even problems like diabetes or even autoimmune problems often arises after the age of 30, or at least we see them more giving symptoms after the age of 30. So developing this condition, you know, I would say the mid-range of 40, you know, to 45, would not be a surprise if somebody is developing a any other condition related to hormones or autoimmune problems.
Or inflammation. Now, inflammation well, plays a role in this.
Basically, the linkage is the following. We know how important the estrogen, and not only estrogen, but only also insulin and the adrenals, how important they are to our healthy collagen formation, to our healthy cell regeneration, especially in the area of musculoskeletal, as well as the blood vessels. The background of frozen shoulder right now tightly linked to loss of vascularization or drying of like small blood vessels.
Like a desiccation. So, right. Women who may experience like vaginal atrophy, you know, pain on intercourse or vaginal dryness, it's not just that tissue that may be becoming desiccated. It may be their joints, literally, that become desiccated. Their skin surfaces, the internal synovial membranes, the capsular
and
material.
And it's linked to the oxygen intake and delivery of that oxygen by small blood vessels.
Okay.
So we see the dryness of the blood vessels or closure of the small blood vessels that deliver the oxygen and life to a ligament or a capsule of the shoulder. And the capsule of the shoulder becomes scarred. It almost like it freezes and becomes fibrotic.
And
we call it fibrotic.
Tightens up.
It's a lot of scar tissue that being developed around it. And yes, it closes. It tightens up. So not only that it sucks the head of the humerus in, the actual, the bone that, that we're supposed to move the arm on, it also limits the movement altogether of the capsule. And now the strings that are moving that capsule freak out. Because they have no idea what's happening.
Okay. And they're, and not, they and they're not very strong. You know, I remember from anatomy class, they're little, really tiny, tiny muscles. You know, we think of muscles as being like your thigh muscles and your biceps, but these muscles are very
small. Some of them are larger, some of them are smaller, but what happens now, we have a larger muscle to start compensating.
Okay.
So, for example, what happens pulling, when we cannot...
It's pulling hard.
We cannot open the capsule, shoulder capsule. We're still going to attempt to do so using our movers, right? We have muscles that stabilize us and the muscles that move us. So one of the biggest compensator of upper body is a trapezius muscle. Muscle runs from the neck down to the shoulder, down to the shoulder blades.
Neck tension and all that going on.
Well, and that's exactly what happens. The trapezius muscle starts overpowering everything else, trying to lift up the arm and still restore that mobility using absolutely inappropriate muscle movement. So this very similar scenario happening with the muscle that lays underneath the shoulder blade, like subscapularis. We also have another muscle that becomes almost inactive, and it's a very important muscle that creates depression of the shoulder, internal rotation of the shoulder, meaning it brings the shoulder inside, called latissimus. It's a big, broad muscle on the side. Now,
the so-called lats, your lats.
That disengagement of movement and overpowering of other muscles creates a disbalance.
It's a, in a way, it's the body's effort to protect the shoulder, you know, because it's pulling it in, holding it in place, preventing injury, but in effect it becomes locked. Is that something, is there something to that when it's responding to pain signals?
Well, besides, absolutely, well, the body doesn't want you to move something that's chronically inflamed.
Right.
The body also doesn't want you to move anything that's in pain. So you disengage that, that movement process. You disengage the muscle activity. but you still need to move. You still need to brush your hair and get something off the shelf. So what happens? You just lock up the muscle and you start overusing other muscles. And that's where the word repetitive, the phrase repetitive injury syndrome comes into play. It turns into repetitive injury to muscles that were just absolutely healthy and have nothing to do with this problem. That's where a lot of times people come like, well, yeah, it's frozen, but that's not what bothers me. This actually doesn't move because stage two of this condition, the inflammation dies down, the pain, you know, relatively insignificant, but now we have pain in compensatory areas. We have pain in the spine, in the neck. We have pain getting headaches because now trapezius is constantly pulling down on the base of the skull, creating inflammation in that area and creating chronic headaches.
Wow.
So people actually often come in just like we start asking them, how's your blood sugar level and how's your energy level and how do you sleep at night and, you know, how much do you sweat? And they're like, wait a second. I'm telling you about my neck pain, my headaches, and you're asking about all these foreign questions. Well, yes. Mm-hmm. And that's why it's important to ask these questions, because if you don't want to keep on misdiagnosing something, mistreating something, you need to get to the bottom of the problem.
Well, anecdotally, I will tell you something that's interesting, is that they have done studies of the symptoms that women have in menopause in the United States versus in Japan. Mm-hmm. And in the United States, you know, it's kind of a cultural joke. It's like, okay, could you please, you know, open the window here? You know, it's a little too warm in here. And then, you know, a little giggle and it's like, oh, a little hot flash, right? If you told that joke in Japan, for the most part, they would just give you a blank stare. They would say, what are you talking about? Because people in Japan consume an enormous amount of soy, which actually has been shown to alleviate hot flashes. But the cultural joke there that's going to elicit a little bit of a titter, a little bit of a laugh, is sore shoulder. And when you say sore shoulder, then that's when the joke engages, oh, you're going through the change. Because it is there, because of the soy, they mask the symptoms of hot flashes, but they can't get rid of the symptoms of sore shoulder associated with menopause.
And again, not that we don't want to freak everybody out. Not that everybody gets this problem.
No, it's not universal, but it is a susceptibility. It's a time of vulnerability when women can be more prone to that. And I also think that, you know, women have a little bit weaker musculature overall, so they're a little more prone to problems. Is that possibly true?
Well, again, with even very active women, with age, we know that it's much harder to recruit muscles, and it has to do with hormones as well. And, of course, the muscles will not be as powerful and as strong, but we see quite... I actually just recently had a very nice lady coming all the way from Costa Rica. She's been a yoga and Tai Chi instructor for many, many years, extremely well fit, really well tuned with herself. She does meditations on a regular basis. So you really can't say that this person is not fit.
Not fit, yeah.
She's perfectly fit. Yet she's going through this condition for the past 9 months and, it completely shut down her life.
She couldn't do downward dog and did different positions.
She was actually teaching with one arm.
Oh, no. Yeah.
For 9 months. Yeah. And this person, it was interesting because she only could stay for 10 days. She had to get back to work and go back to Costa Rica. And it was probably one of the most challenging quick treatment I ever was pushed on myself, because
it's not ideal. If it's like, I'm here for 10 days, fix me.
There's no miracle.
Yeah, right.
There's no miracle. Yeah. Everything, even with the most perfect program, takes time. Mm-hmm. But when she walked in, on treatment number three or day number three, it wasn't consecutive days, and she said, Doc, I mean, her range of motion started progressing really fast, but the pain that was really what debilitated her. She said, it was the first night in 9 months that I slept. That, you see, that's the amazing benefit that you can, you know, get to somebody almost immediately. And this is something that really, and we'll touch upon the program that I have created, and there's a reason behind it. But it's that debilitation of not only not being able to do your daily activity or do your, you know, daily work, it's not being able to sleep.
Yeah.
And that's sometimes how bad it gets.
You know, it's annoying. It's not going to curtail your longevity, but, you know, it just curtails your functionality, especially if you're an active athletic individual or if your profession depends on it. It can be quite devastating. Okay, in part two, we're going to talk about some specific measures to address frozen shoulder with our guest, movement specialist and expert in chronic conditions. He takes care of many athletes and, you know, professionals and amateurs, as well as dancers and artists and musicians who can be prone to this because of repetitive stress injury. Here in New York City at Rebalance NYC, check out the website rebalancenyc.com for information about for the questionnaire we're talking about. And he also has a wonderful ebook there that you can look at that describes frozen shoulder and some of the treatment approaches, which we'll get into in part two. So we'll be right back with Dr. Arkady Lipnitsky. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.